1952, They Never Learn. The Republican candidate, no matter who wins the nomination this year, will campaign in the South for the first time in history. That's what Gay Gabrielson, the party's national chairman, told a press conference the other day. This proves that the Republicans never learn. But unlike their party symbol, the elephant, they do forget. They have not learned that five consecutive defeats over the past 20 years have been due largely to the fact that they have abandoned all principles which founders of the party held dear. They refuse to observe that their glorification of privilege at the expense of badly needed social reform has driven the farmer, the laborer, the white-collar worker, and minority and independent groups in the waiting arms of the Democrats. And by this latest announcement, the once grand old party proves that forgotten is the fact that it was this same catering to the lily whites of Dixie by President Hoover that brought an end to the long Republican hold on the national reins. So, in 1952, we again find the Republican old guard refusing to believe history. They are busily stirring as a cure the same old witch's brew which sickened their predecessors. Not only have they failed to learn from the woes which have befallen their own party, but they stubbornly ignore the fate which befell the Dixiecrats who bolted over the civil rights issue. Beneath the hard crust of sectionalism, there is still a basic American decency which cannot be repressed. It is reasonable to suppose that the South will reject it even more violently when it comes in the Yankee Doodle trappings of a Republican last-ditch effort to garner votes. There is no doubt that some segments of the South gag on portions of the Fair Deal program. But party tags being what they are, they prefer to squirm under their traditional labels as Democrats rather than risk defeat as turncoat Republicans, although the name has long since lost the liberal connotations which made it obnoxious to the South. Chairman Gabrielson, it appears, is trying to put into operation the cynical suggestion of Senator Kurt Mundt. Mr. Mundt favors a new party composed of Republicans and Dixiecrats. This would be an ideal arrangement for all concerned. It would give the diehard Republicans, who no longer and perhaps never did believe in true Republican ideals, a chance to join their soulmates. In addition, it would free the rejuvenated Democrats so that they can march forward along the path charted by the late President Roosevelt and faithfully followed by President Truman. The renegades, we feel sure, would never attain sufficient power to hamstring those among us who would like to see America the progressive, democratic nation it professes to be. Opinion page, May 25, 1954. What have they lost? Some few people in the South are objecting to the unanimous decision of the United States Supreme Court holding that public school segregation is unconstitutional. Strangely enough, the loudest objections are coming from governors, attorneys general, and congressmen who have raised their right hands and solemnly sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States. The oath of office they took would appear to be no more than a scrap of paper. What is it that the Supreme Court has taken from them, or what has it imposed upon them? All that the decision says is that public schools from now on must be public, that educational institutions supported by all the taxpayers no longer can be reserved for white students only. The court gave solid and profound reasons for its ruling. It says that Jim Crow schools are designed deliberately to put colored people in an inferior position. Moreover, it held that segregation itself is harmful and against the public welfare and is a clear violation of both the letter and spirit of the Constitution. Nothing in this historic document says that white people have to love colored people. It does not compel white people to entertain colored people in their homes or private clubs or invite them to their churches. All it says is that federal and state schools must be opened to all alike. Anyone who wants to can keep his hates and prejudices, but from now on, he is denied the sanction of law in exercising them in the public schools. All of God's children. Crude speech and manners should accompany segregation as it goes into exile forever, we hope. An example of crudity is contained in the public address of a church leader last week who said, "We are the greatest spenders in the world. We have steak appetites and pig feet change in our pocketbook." The man who said that is the nationally recognized leader of our largest denomination. He wanted a lie from his audience and got it, at the expense of an undignified and unflattering statement that reflects upon a whole group of people striving desperately against many handicaps to win majority acceptance. The church leader was so anxious to be funny that he did not calculate the poison in his speech. He would have been the first to resent this statement if it had been made by others. As a responsible leader, he must learn the principle of leadership, namely, the positive approach. Uncle Tom is still acceptable among certain elements because he humiliates himself and his associates. Self-ridicule is his stock in trade. What we need for the new generation is the consummate expression of the virtues and aspirations we have in common with all Americans. Our supposed differences have been exploited too long. When leaders speak, they must be certain that what they say is no longer addressed to the small audience in front of them. As Americans, they should speak to all America. All of God's children have wings. 1963. Come on down, marchers. There is every indication now that a march of 100,000 colored Americans on Washington, scheduled for October to protest racial discrimination in jobs, has been moved up to August to protest an expected Southern filibuster against the president's civil rights legislative package. Should they come? Our answer is a thundering and a resounding yes. Come on down, marchers. We would respectfully disagree with our sister newspaper, the Evening Star, whose editorial last Friday, "Time for a Pause," warned that colored organizations will be making a tragic mistake if they demonstrate while Congress is considering the civil rights proposals. We disagree. First of all, there is an amazing new unity in the colored community in favor of this march. The New American Labor Council, CORE, SCLC, SNCC, the Elks, the Masons, and several unions, which are all enthusiastically co-sponsoring the August March on Washington. Secondly, we find it difficult to understand why the Star and so many other well-intentioned people would place a greater degree of responsibility on colored people than the United States Congress. A Senate filibuster in the face of the current racial crisis is unparalleled legislative irresponsibility. Let the Star direct its meditative efforts to the Southern senators. Thirdly, colored Americans have been pausing for 100 years. Don't our white friends think that a solid century of pausing is enough? It's the only pause which has refreshed nobody but the Southern race haters. To Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., A. Philip Randolph, Reverend George Lawrence, James Farmer, Cleveland Robinson, James Forman, and our good fraternal brothers, we offer just four words of encouragement. Come on down, marchers.